Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively through a bye week, into fall, into November, and certainly getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road, presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. I have not been able to play. I've been off the field the last couple of weeks, but getting back. We're doing double duty this week, next week, two this week. I haven't had a crab cake in 3 weeks. We'll be at Silver Spring Mining Company with my pal Gary Risling, former Skipjack, who set up, made a life here from Canada A. We'll have Gary on. We'll be chatting with him as well as Councilman David Marks. I think Kevin Benson, my friend from Rosedale Federal, I'm going to extend an invite to him, try to get him out this week. But it's Thursday this week, Friday this week. We're downtown. We're in Fells Point, right in the heart of it. There was some water issues down there. Chop Tank, Alex Smith, our friends at the Atlas Group. We're going to get together, have a crab cake, probably some fried chicken, probably some crab soup as well. It'll be good to be back down at the Chop Tank. I was there the night that it opened. Certainly been down there during the plague and out and about in Fells Point. Next week, Fadley's on Wednesday in the morning. We've got a great guest list there and a great crab cake there and some great mac and cheese as well. And then next Friday at Nick's Grandstand Grill, finally getting back out and trying for a couple of weeks to get up there. It will happen on the 12th. So two this week, two next week, all presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. Luke Jones joins us now. I am wearing my Raskin Global shirt. I also want to give a little love to Leonard Raskin, his wife and family out in Columbus, Ohio. Just a shout out to them, and I'll find Leonard. You can find him out at Baltimore Positive. Ravens on the shelf for a week. Luke, it feels like when you sit and watch all these other games, not just the other games, but like the World Series, college football things, a whole day of football, Monday Night Football, all of that. It feels like the Ravens haven't played in a long time, right? Especially when you watch the Bengals go out there and get kicked around a little bit. And the Browns getting kicked around a little bit. I know we talked about that earlier as to, burying the Steelers, which I never seem to do around here. But one thing the Ravens didn't do over the weekend, they didn't lose. And trading deadline, all of this happening, Halloween, interesting bye week in the middle of the season for them. The last look wasn't a good one. That usually leaves Coach Harbaugh very, very pent up during this period of time. And I don't think it's going to be hard to get motivated to play the Minnesota Vikings, especially they didn't look very good on Sunday night, did they?
They did not. And maybe it's the Kirk Cousins primetime thing. I mean, that's been a narrative for a long time that, you know, Kirk Cousins is great. 1 o'clock kickoff, regional coverage, but you put him on primetime, you know, put him in the spotlight and he's not very good. So I don't know. Maybe that doesn't bode well when you consider what Carson Wentz and Joe Burrow and some other quarterbacks, Derek Carr, what they've done against the Ravens this year. But you know, it's funny. The Ravens have generally had their bye week right around this time for several years now. It's really fallen in the middle of the season, and you know, it's really coincided with the trade deadline pretty nicely. So I think, you know, with trade deadline discussion, whether you make a move, whether you don't make a move, there's always that sense of self-assessment and what do you do well, what you don't do so well. And I think, you know, the Ravens' areas of weakness or concern are pretty evident. You know, we've talked about them. Chances are we'll continue to talk about that. But it is interesting that, you know, you kind of look around the league and, you know, we've talked about what, four straight weeks now, there's been a new team in the top spot in the AFC as we get to the end of the week. It was Buffalo, it was the Ravens, it was the Bengals, and now it's Tennessee. I mean, there'll be someone different next week, I'm sure. So it's just wild in that way. But you know, it's a reminder when you haven't played for a while that you look around and say, all right, you know, the Ravens have their issues. There's no question about that. And I think it's important not to be happy with a 5-2 record just because you had a bunch of injuries and maybe expectations were tempered at the beginning of the season, because they did have a fairly soft early season schedule. And, you know, multiple outlets would agree, you know, when you're looking at Football Outsiders and ESPN has their football power index and all these different outlets. So they have had a relatively forgiving schedule early on, albeit, you know, first month they were on the road quite a bit. But we've talked about these three games coming out of the bye. I mean, Minnesota is a strange team because you look at their talent, really on both sides of the ball, but you look at their skill talent offensively, and you look at some of their metrics, and I mean, you look what happened. Cooper Rush and the Cowboys doing what they did against them Sunday night. And I know they didn't have Patrick Peterson in the secondary, and Danielle Hunter goes down with a shoulder injury, which is something worth monitoring as it relates to this Sunday's game. But you know, the Vikings, to me, they feel like a team that's doing less with more than maybe any other team in the league right now, that I feel like on paper, they should be pretty good. And they've played close games, but boy, they leave you wanting. I mean, they really do. And now what that means in terms of what we've seen from the Ravens, where the Ravens blow the doors off the Chargers, the Ravens beat the Chiefs, although other teams have beaten the Chiefs, so maybe that's not quite as impressive in 2021. But you see that. But then you see them also need a 66-yard field goal to beat the winless Detroit Lions. So I don't know what we're going to, you know, I don't know what to expect exactly on Sunday, but some of the issues we've talked about, we can talk about the injuries in terms of what it's meant for the offensive line, certainly what it's meant for the running game and the running back position. We can talk about other, you know, losing LJ Fort, for example, and what that's meant for their struggling young inside linebackers and needing to bring Josh Bynes back. But the area nester that to me is a non-starter in terms of you have to get better is tackling. I mean, Marlon Humphrey isn't injured, right? Chuck Clark and Deshaun Elliott were their starting set of safeties from Jump Street this year. To me, the tackling problems they've had and what that's meant in terms of giving up big plays, that has to improve. If you're going to do anything of any note down the stretch, especially when you get into January, which, you know, I fully expect this to be a playoff team. I still expect this team to win the division. I haven't changed my mind on that. And, you know, the Bengals losing on Sunday only reinforces the division part. But there's a difference between winning the division and making the playoffs and wanting to do damage. And this team's got to tackle better. I mean, are you kidding me with some of what we've seen? And I wrote this at BaltimorePositive.com, my 12 Ravens thoughts going into the bye week. You can check that out. But as I'm kind of looking at this team, and I said this to you last week, but I kind of throw out the Bengals game. It's their worst game of the year. And I throw out the Chargers game, their most dominating, impressive performance of the year, if you will. So I kind of look at the first five games, and they're 4-1. You'll take that, right? Especially given all the injuries. But some of those issues that came to the forefront in the blowout loss to the Bengals were issues we were talking about in previous weeks. So, you know, we'll continue to talk about the running game. We'll continue to talk about the offensive line. And, you know, they bring in Cedric Abuehi, former first round pick of the Bengals. He's on the practice squad for now. Does he fill in at right tackle for Patrick McCary eventually? Who knows? I mean, there are a lot of moving parts and the, you know, talking about the deadline and post deadline guys being let go. There's going to be all kinds of, I think, you know, they brought six or seven different offensive linemen onto their practice squad in recent weeks. So there are issues that this team is going to continue to have, or concerns, I should say, or at least topics of interest as it relates to this roster. But for me, the tackling thing is the thing that just, that has to get better. You can't have that. And what's crazy, I look at the Ravens defense, and going into the bye week, they were fourth in the league in third down defense. What does that tell you? That tells you situationally for stretches, they've been really good. But this tackling nonsense has led them to give up a lot of big plays. Certainly in the passing game, we've seen that be particularly true. But you know, we said it after the Bengals game. Sometimes it's okay to bend, right? You know, you can give up some yardage. You can give up some first downs. I mean, Jamar Chase on the long touchdown. We talked about it. It wasn't a big deal that he got a first down there. The big deal is three guys miss a tackle and it turns into an 80-plus yard touchdown. I mean, you just can't have that. And you're talking about veteran guys that have been guilty of that. We've picked on Patrick Queen. And I don't want to say pick on him. I mean, he's a first-round pick. I mean, second year, expectation should be high. But he isn't the only one who's had tackling issues. You know, we've talked about the injury to Marcus Peters and how that's hurt them. But Marlon Humphrey hasn't played as well as he's capable of playing. And their safeties have missed tackles. Guys that are veteran, more established players. So I keep coming back to that issue first and foremost. I mean, we can talk about other deficiencies on either side of the ball, and you know, I haven't mentioned the pass rush, for example, but the tackling, it's football 101. I mean, you just can't have that. It's that simple. And John Harbaugh said it best the day after the loss to the Bengals, until we become a more consistent tackling team, we're going to be a really mediocre defense. And he's exactly right.
Luke Jones is here. He will be in Owings Mills all week long as the Ravens prepare for the Minnesota Vikings. Luke, I find it interesting, your assessment of throwing out the last two games. I'm all for saying that, except that they're the last two games. And
sure,
how good it can be and how bad it can be on a week-to-week basis and matchups, because the styles make fights. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But when they can't run the ball well, the tackling looks worse. You know what I mean? Yeah. And when you're not in second and two, it's a different game. And then you add sloppiness in. You know what I mean? Whether it's Matt Skura snapping issues last year, whether it's running backs not really knowing when Lamar is going to stuff it, when he's going to keep it, all of those sort of communication things. I think part of the passing issue is that he's had more time to work with Hollywood, more time to work with Mark Andrews. There's just more time. There's more familiarity. Mm-hmm. Not so much with the O-line, not so much with the running game. And I think that's one of the reasons the passing game might look a little better than the running game. And Lamar extends plays and always has that factor that he can make the first guy miss and then all hell breaks loose for the other team, right? And there aren't – you could say that about a lot of guys, you know, through the course of the history of football, whether it's Walter Payton or, you know, Joe Washington did that here, Lydell Mitchell, that there's guys that make other guys miss. But what Lamar does is a completely different thing than anybody else has ever had behind the line of scrimmage with the ability to throw it, right? So all of those are the positives, but the offensive line and the running backs, I don't know where the fast fix on that is other than time and familiarity. And that doesn't happen when McCary's out and Villanueva's right. No, he's left. And Stanley's in. No, he's out. Boy's out. Boyle, is he back? Is he really back? And how will that change things? And how will he be utilized? So there's always that cavalry coming over the hill that's going to help things out. And Josh Bynes, I guess, is that, or whatever this trading deadline would be, and they have no cap space. So we're not looking at that. We would say, well, can Justin Houston be better? Can Calais Campbell be better? Can they scheme better? You know, how do you practice tackling in week 10 when you're 30 years old and this is what you've done since you were 12? So I don't know about practicing tackling or you know, thinking about it or studying more, but when you're there in the field of battle, this group of players has had an issue with this, and I don't know, they get coached up better in week 10, you know, for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're totally right on that, and it's not as though we haven't seen Marlon Humphrey tackle at a really high level in the past. I mean, you know, you can say what you want about Patrick Queen or Malik Harrison. I mean, inexperienced guys, you know, other guys playing that, you know, haven't played a whole lot for the Ravens. But you know, some of the names we've mentioned are guys that have been really good tacklers. So your hope is you can remedy that. And
have you been impressed with Queen at any point? I mean, I'm just being really honest with you. I mean, if I went back to your tweets in game and say how many times we've noticed him, or said there's a hell of a play, dude, I remember Ray Lewis. You know, I mean, I'm not new to the game, and I don't need to notice it like that because the game's different. But you know, there's the first round draft pick thing you put on Hollywood Brown, the thing we're about to hang on Bateman, right? That, hey, where are you? Here we are. And the thing we have with Humphrey, where he got paid, Stanley got paid, one of them in there. The other one, you know, he loves himself, him. And there's no doubt about that. And, you know, I follow his social media dribble, and I've seen the act, and I've seen the strip ball. And when the ball pops out and Patrick Queen falls on it, look at that. First round draft picks producing. But when it doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen consistently, and we're, in the middle of the year, you know, I'm not expecting him to even turn into CJ Mosley a week and a half from now, you know?
Yeah, I think that's I think it's fair. And to be clear, to answer your question, he has made splash plays. I mean, he was defensive player of the week against the Bengals last year. I mean, we have seen the splash plays, but here's the problem, Nestor. And I'm going to pick on Rob Ryan a little bit, but the reality is he's sticking up for his guy. I mean, what do you want him to say publicly? You know, and this alludes to what you were just mentioning, how Rob Ryan at one point, you can check out his comments at BaltimorePositive.com, and you know, you've heard it on AM 1570 over the last week. But he made the comment that Ray Lewis wasn't Ray Lewis right away, which is true to a tiny degree, although I seem to remember Ray Lewis being Defensive Player of the Week, week
I
one.
I was there for all those games in 1996.
Exactly. He was Ray Lewis pretty darn early, right?
Really.
So, yeah. So, again, but in fair, Rob, I mean, he's sticking up for his guy. He's sticking up for a 21-year-old kid, 22 years old, that, you know, he's trying to figure it out. But that's not my issue. And I, you know, this is what I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com last week, that the issue is not Patrick Queen failing to live up to an extraordinarily impossible standard of a Hall of Fame line, not just a Hall of Fame linebacker. I mean, Ray Lewis is on the short list of the greatest players in NFL history. I mean, that's just the truth. So it's not that. It's not even that he's not living up to CJ Mosley, who, for as much as maybe you didn't want to pay him, and look, that was smart. I mean, it hasn't worked out with the New York Jets, but CJ Mosley still made 4 Pro Bowls in 5 years with the Ravens. So he was doing something right. You know, even if he wasn't Ray Lewis, which if that's your biggest knock on a guy, then you're doing something right.
And Mosley did all that playing with one arm too. Like I had Peter Boulware on last week. If you go out to Baltimore Positive, he's another guy that played with one arm.
Sure.
He did it a long time, but when he was out there, you knew Peter Boulware was on the field.
Sure. But my issue, Nestor, and this is where I'm going to go back to what you said initially about, you know, how many times have you seen him make splash plays? I've seen him make splash plays, but the problem is Patrick Queen was drafted. Let's go back in time. CJ Mosley moves on, gets what, $17 million a year from the Jets. God bless him. You know, it hasn't worked out for the Jets very well. You know, he opted out. He was hurt his first year there. He opted out because of the pandemic last year. And you know, I mean, good for him. They beat the Bengals this past Sunday. But the issue was CJ Mosley left. And if you recall, who stepped into his spot initially? It was Patrick Owosso, who is a great story as an undrafted free agent, you know, began his career on the practice squad, got promoted, was on special teams, and eventually carves out a role playing as a part-time player as the Will linebacker. And he was really good at blitzing. And he made splash plays, and you saw potential in this guy, and it was very athletic. Well, the Ravens moved Patrick Owosso to the mic in 2019 and thought, okay, we're going to lose CJ Mosley, but this is going to be the guy that replaces him. Well, we know 4 weeks into that, they brought Josh Bynes and LJ Ford in because Patrick Owosso and LJ, and not LJ Ford, Kenny Young could not do the job. Well, 2 years later, they have Josh Bynes back in the starting lineup, and Patrick Queen has moved to the Will spot, which, look, he has played better the last couple weeks. But the problem is he's not playing every down anymore, and that's fine for a short-term fix, but you do not draft an off-ball linebacker in the first round to be your Will, to be the guy that's coming off the field in passing situations. That's a late day two pick at best.
That's as a far Mike as Caldwell that profile. Is what that
yeah,
is.
I mean, well, the problem is,
Patrick Queen is able to Ray Lewis. You know, the reason they drafted Ray Lewis is because Mike Caldwell wasn't any good.
Yeah, no, well, and you know, Pepper Johnson was old, right? You know,
I mean, well, the real reason is because they
couldn't afford him
with Kyle Brady and didn't have a pick. And that pick got wheeled back to them. So, and 25 other teams looked at Ray Lewis and said, who's
too small
guy? Yeah.
Too small. Sure. No question about it. But I mean, the problem here is Patrick Queen's trending like Patrick Owosso, who was a former rookie free agent. So, again, I don't want to pick on him too much. But to your point, when you're talking about where the Ravens are right now, and I look at the defense, expensive defensive line, old defensive line, expiring contracts, we know they need to get younger on the defensive line. And I throw Justin Matabike in there as someone who has been fine this year, but Peter King was talking about him as a dark horse defensive player of the year. Now, I love Peter. I think he was nuts for, you know, whoever told him that was, I think, you know, a little too much hype there. But I expected more out of Matabike, and he's just been okay. But they're older and more expensive on the defensive line, so they need to get younger there. We know that over the last 3 years, you know, the last 4 years with Lamar Jackson as the Ravens quarterback, they've spent most of their money on the defensive side of the ball. Why? Because their offense has been guys that are young, rookie contracts. Great, right? I mean, that's good. That's good cap management in terms of how they did that. However, we know that roster is growing more and more expensive. So missing on a first-round pick, in the same way we talked about this with Matt Elam, and the Ravens chased the safety position post-Ed Reed for a long time, in the same way we talked about Brashad Perriman, in the same way we talked about Arthur Brown as a second-round pick, those picks, when you're starting to talk about having to pay a quarterback and pay some of your other young stars in the way that the Ravens are doing that now, your margin for error, you miss out on a first-round pick, which is going to happen. You know, you're going to whiff on some first-round picks from time to time. The Ravens haven't done it very often, but when it happens and you're in a position where you're needing to pay guys and your quarterback might quite possibly could be the highest paid player in the league. You know, if Lamar Jackson continues to do more than just about anyone in the league right now.
What would
now,
make I mean, him not at this point? He's an MVP. What would, I mean, other than an injury, what would make him not anybody be in, think he's not going to get, you know, $50 million?
I'll tell you the first reason why he doesn't have an agent. I mean, quite frankly, from a strictly speaking, from a business standpoint, but the point is that Patrick Queen mistake potentially, which let's face it right now. And again, I don't want to write the kid off. He's a year and a half into his career, but it's not moving in the right direction. Him becoming a part-time platoon guy at the will spot, it's not what you had in mind when you drafted the guy. So again, then how do you make up for that? And ultimately when you're talking about this team moving forward, first of all, their stars need to play at their absolute best. And you mentioned Marlon Humphrey. You know me, Nestor. I'm a big Marlon Humphrey guy. I've been a big Marlon Humphrey guy since his rookie year, even though most of us, including myself, kind of looked at that pick in 2017 and kind of wondered. It's like, well, they have Jimmy Smith. They just signed Brandon Carr. You know, why are they drafting a corner? Well, you understand why now. But that said,
they drafted a corner because you yelled at them for five straight off
seasons. Well, there's that. Sure.
Talking about that Tom Brady. By the way, when I had Seth Wickersham on, he talked about that two touchdown game. Mm-hmm. You know, in 14, 15, whatever year that was, we
2014 postseason.
Yep. Right. And how that really changed everything with Belichick and Brady, that they're coming back from that. And everything, every Super Bowl week you and I sat at and all those other places where Tom Brady and Bill Belichick showed up and fat heads on the wall, right, that came from that. But that begat Marlon Humphrey and begat the beginning of you beating them up about the secondary every year and them not being good enough, right?
Well, I mean, philosophically from that point, and keep in mind that 2014 – they had already cut Shockey Brown. They had already cut, was it Dominique Franks, I think it was, Rashawn Melvin, of course, got burned like crazy by Tom Brady in that game. You know, we remember what Edelman throwing the touchdown. I mean, you know,
you remember the specific players, and I remember the thing.
I mean, Anthony Levine was playing corner for that team. And look, God bless Anthony Levine. He's had a heck of a career. He was a really good dime back for about 3-4 years. But when he's one of your top three, that's not saying much for your depth from a secondary standpoint. So they learned from that, though. And we've seen really ever since then, they've drafted a corner in the first three rounds, I think all but 1 or 2 years. You know,
and they had a kid die.
That's 8 years now.
Right? I mean, they had a kid they liked.
Sure,
die.
Sure.
They had another kid in Tavon Young. They can't keep him on the field, and they thought he was Ladarius Webb, right? Ladarius Webb and then couldn't get healthy. Jimmy Smith's been around a decade plus and it's still, he'll be running around Sunday, right? I mean, they've done well there, you know, but to your point, you need six of them.
Well, and that's the big thing. They've done well there, but, and Ozzie towards his last few years, especially, and we're talking about that era, every year pre-draft press conference and, you know, state of the Ravens, said you can't have enough corners. And yeah. So that's why, I mean, you look at the Ravens right now, you know, they've lost Marcus Peters, you know, Chris Westry was on IR, who was, you know, obviously a camp star and, you know, should be back at some point here in the coming weeks. You know, Anthony Averett has been picked on a lot by the fan base, and sure, he's going to get targeted when Marlon Humphrey's on the other side. Right. You know, I think he's held up respectably well, but ultimately you need your stars to play at the highest level. And, you know, I mentioned with Marlon Humphrey, going back to what I was saying before we went off track here, talking about just the history of the position over the last 7-8 years, you know, they need Marlon Humphrey to be the best version of himself. You know, and he wasn't this past Sunday against, or two Sundays ago against Cincinnati. So you need that. You need your stars to play at their absolute best. I mean, Lamar Jackson has played fantastic football this year. You know, he's had a couple stretches here and there where he hasn't been perfect. No one is. Tom Brady wasn't perfect on Sunday throwing a pick late in the game with a backup quarterback beating the Buccaneers. But you know, you need to get high level play from your young stars, that especially the ones who've been paid. That's why Ronnie Stanley not being out there is just such a killer for them. I mean, invested $100 million in this guy and his ankle got wrecked 2 days later. Now, that's not a knock on the Ravens. It's terrible luck, but you have to try to overcome that. And that's tough. And that's where you do look at this team. It's why, you know, the offensive line, you know, see who they, you know, they brought in different guys on the practice squad and we'll see who's in the mix. And you hope Villanueva holds up for the whole year, knowing he's older than you'd like your left tackle to be in an ideal world. And Patrick McCary's on the shelf right now. You hope
there
he's
is
not
a little bit of that
time.
for giving a quarterback $50 million. There's a little bit of like dead money on Stanley, old
sure.
guys
oh,
on
yeah.
the O-line, old guys on the D-line, falling apart on the back end, really no running back to speak of or the situation or whatever it's going to be. They just paid their tight end. They've drafted up these wide receivers, and now they got to protect the quarterback long yeah. enough for him to scheme him up, for him to get him the ball and make the running game still the most important part of the game, because that's what they do. You know, when they're passing too much, this isn't going to go well. I keep saying that.
Yeah, I mean, and now it's gone way better than anyone would have thought. I mean, you look at, I mean, I was looking, and I'll have this at BaltimorePositive.com this week. I revisit my predictions at the beginning of the season. I do 10 Ravens predictions. I, you know, I don't do league-wide nearly as much, kind of just focus on the Ravens. But, I mean, you have Lamar Jackson. He's at a career high 8.6 yards per passing attempt. I mean, he's right up there with the best in the league in that way. He's, you know, I think going into week 8, I think he was second in the league in yards per completion. I mean, and we know for a big portion of the first month and a half, he was leading the league in that category. So it's no surprise he's throwing 7 more passes per game. He should be when he's throwing that well. You should be throwing the ball more if you're throwing it that effectively. The problem is, Nestor, on the flip side, he's attempting 7 more passes a game, yet his rushing attempts have stayed the same. Actually, there's been a slight increase. What does that tell you? They are relying on him more than ever. I mean, they have needed him to play at a really high level. I mean, look at the Indy game. I mean, look how poorly the defense played in that game. They needed Lamar Jackson to be, dare I say, Tom Brady-like, you know, Joe Montana-like, Dan Marino-like, in the final quarter and a half of that game for them to come back and win. But you're asking him, you know, you're depending on him doing so much when he's your entire running game right now. I mean, that's just the truth. I mean, they're just not getting much from these young, from these other running backs, you know, not young. They're certainly not young, older running backs that lack explosiveness. You have Tyson Williams, who you just, I think it's evident they don't trust him, you know, whether it's they don't like his vision, whether it's seeing him late in the game against the Bengals where, you know, Lamar's trying to change a play and he didn't know what he was doing.
We're not around it anymore to know why he's in the outhouse,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There's something about putting him in the outhouse that 3 veteran backs who don't even know the playbook, and Le'Veon Bell looks like he's in quicksand. So,
yeah, I mean, so regardless, I mean, and maybe the part of the solution is you coach him up a little more during the bye week and, you know, 'cause he does have a little more juice. He does run better than these older guys. It's just the truth, you know? So, but you've got to figure that out. But at the same time, boy, you're just leaning so hard on Lamar Jackson. And as you mentioned with the offensive line, I mean, he has been sacked and hit more. And now when you have a quarterback who holds the ball as long as Lamar, 'cause he's waiting for plays to develop and we know he can take off and turn what's going to be a 6-yard loss into a 20-yard gain just like that. I mean, that's the special experience that is Lamar Jackson. So he is going to take a few more sacks in the process, but you do worry about that because you don't have that cavalry of, you know, a month ago we were talking about the possibility, knowing that it wasn't a guarantee, but the possibility of Ronnie Stanley coming back at some point. Well, that's done now. So Villanueva is your left tackle and you're hoping his knee holds up and, you know, him at age 33 is not going to become something that's painful to watch in December. You know, he's held up pretty well. You know, he's had his rough times, but he's played well at times as
well. We saw what happened to the Chiefs last year when they lost their offensive line.
Well, and that's a big thing. I would love to
play the Chiefs. You know, if you endure, I would love to play the Chiefs without their tackles.
Yeah, no question about it.
I mean, we beat them, you know, 6 weeks ago here, right? But that's a game changer, and I don't know how that's going to hold up over 9 weeks. I don't know how that's going to hold up against Cleveland and Pittsburgh, where I was watching that game on Sunday, by the way, Luke, and I said to my wife, I'm like, the O-lines and D-lines on both of those teams, that's why the game was 3-3, and they were kicking field goals and beating up kickers. It was an old Cleveland Stadium, Three Rivers kind of weird 1988 kind of, we're not in the league anymore, or AFC, what the hell was it? Different Central then.
The Central.
Oilers blue, yes.
There you go.
But those teams play in the trenches, and we're not where we are right now.
Yeah, and I think that's a fascinating point, and it's clearly true. And we've talked so much about, you get into November and December and early January playing in the AFC North, where you know the weather is not going to be quite very pleasant. You know, it can be quite inclement weather in terms of sloppy fields and all that, and cold. And it is interesting to look at how this Ravens team is profiling right now, where, you know, the passing game and Lamar Jackson's arm and legs, you know, obviously his legs haven't been the problem. It's been anyone else's legs or the run blocking per se. But it will be interesting to see how much of that they can improve, because you're going to need that. And you don't want to be in a position where the elements are terrible and Lamar's happened to run the ball 23 times because no one else can get any traction. I mean, that's not what you want.
Well, Hayward and Watt are going to run around on him, and Garrett, you know, there's a reason these teams are decent in that way.
Yeah.
And I think owning the line of scrimmage is something they just did 2 years ago when they're going at the Carson California and running around 3 years ago, and 2 years ago when they're in second and two, because Ronnie Stanley's going that way and Marshall Yanda's going that way. Mm-hmm. And they have Mark Ingram, who can go a lot of ways. And I this thing was new and no one had studied it and no one had drafted for it. And then the Chargers ran an 8-3 defense or a 3-8 defense or whatever the hell it was that day, and bottled them up. But it is a down and distance issue, and I don't, as it is, and you and I will be arguing this for the next 9 weeks. First and 10, are they better off trying to hit Mark Andrews on some hitch to get into second and two, or is it the old Lamar left, Lamar right, shake, bake, quake, and then it's second and two? I don't know that they can do that anymore. And based on what I saw last week or 2 weeks ago against the Bengals, and Leonard Raskin and I'm wearing my Raskin Global shirt. We talked about this last week. Lamar was on the ground a lot in that game. Took on a lot of impact, a lot of contact, a lot of indecisiveness, a lot of awkwardness to some degree. Not these, I'm going to trickle out of bounds 15 yards down and give the ball to the official and go back to the huddle. It's a different kind of thing that teams are making him do now, pinching him in between the tackles. Say, you want to run? We're going to hit you. And we're going to hit you all day. And we're going to talk to you when we hit you. And nobody here is blocking for you because they stink. And I'm beating their ass all day. And that's what you're going to hear when it's Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Because I saw it in the Pittsburgh-Cleveland game that we haven't seen the tough teams yet. No offense to the Vikings this week or whatever, Miami will be on 4 days rest. When this thing starts getting trenchy and the schedule's set up that way, got our ass kicked by the Bengals a week and a half ago. And legitimately, in the way we're talking about, in trenches.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, you know, I made the point a little bit earlier that they did have a relatively, it wasn't the easiest in the league. Let's be clear about that. And I don't want to be diminishing, because they're 5-2. You are what your record says you are. And the Ravens, all these close games were all right. Maybe they had some good fortune here and there in game. But, you know, they had some bad luck against the Raiders. You know,
Kansas City and San Diego, or Chargers. I think those are playoff teams. I mean, the Raiders.
Sure.
Or the Raiders. I mean, so.
Right. I mean, it's fine.
But they haven't played division games. That's different.
No question. And again, I mean, the Vikings are just. Kirk Cousins could throw for 400 yards on Sunday, because that's just the weird enigma that his career has been. This guy comes up small when the spotlight is on him. And then when it's a 1 o'clock regional game that a tiny fraction of the country's watching, he looks like a top five quarterback then. So who knows?
And by the way, on the last drive, because I stayed up late, his running back gets him completely blown up by making the wrong block. So when you talk about stuff that happens with Lamar and running backs who are Tyson Williams or are Le'Veon, guys that have had the playbook for a week or two, things that happen out there that get your quarterback killed. I thought that whole game, man, the Vikings, I thought, man, bring them in here this week. I'm ready. Yeah. We need them, and then we need Miami on short rest in a mess. Although, it always signs of life there. And then the Chicago thing, like, these are three winnable games no matter what happened with the Bengals. And you can feel pretty good about yourself if you're 8-2, and then you got to go fight in the division. And as long as Lamar's upright, Nick Boyle's upright, you don't start losing more bodies and important, the Calais Campbells, the veteran guys that they're going to need. They need a better Jimmy Smith. And I don't know that doesn't happen this time of year to 30-year-old guys. And that's something that really worries me, because they're not going to be on coast, because they're going to need those games in December no matter what, because of who they're playing. And I think that's why the league did it this way, because there can be no coast against Pittsburgh or Cleveland. They'll all be in a cat fight by then.
No question. I mean, you mentioned it. And I said this to you last week, these next three games, for me, it's kind of, you better win, because if you don't, you're starting to look at the math and you look at their final seven games. I mean, they're all against teams that are 500 or better. And the worst of that bunch is Cleveland, which
that feels like a 4-3, 3-4 treacherous area. It doesn't feel like blowouts. It doesn't feel like 2nd-2, 1st-10 touchdown. Doesn't feel like 17.
It's going to be a grind
at halftime. None of those games feel ugly to me. They feel,
it's going to be a grind. Yeah. I mean, whether you're throwing the ball or not, it's going to be a grind. I mean, the season's been a grind. That's why I said, throw out the Chargers game, throw out the Bengals game. They were both really weird, but issues that came up in that Bengals game were issues we were talking about before, not running with anyone other than Lamar, as far as inability there, tackling, pass defense. I mean, these were things we were talking about from the Raiders game on. We talked about it in the second half of the Detroit game. Really over the first 5 weeks, the only game that you really point to and say they didn't have very many issues was that Broncos game, which the Broncos stink. And by the way, the Washington football team lose to them. But you look at the final 7 weeks. I mean, Cleveland at Pittsburgh, at Cleveland, Green Bay, who has looked really good, just handed the Cardinals their first loss when Aaron Rodgers didn't have his top receivers on the field. At Cincinnati, which Bengals lost to the Jets aside, I think the Bengals are clearly better. Maybe they're not the class of the AFC. Or the AFC North, the way people were trying to crown them this past week. But then against the Rams, who have looked really good. And then you're home against Pittsburgh week 18, which I don't know what in the same way we're talking about some of the Ravens veterans, I don't know what Ben Roethlisberger is going to look like
January.
Then. Yeah. Yeah. So you just don't know. I mean, we talk about the war of attrition and now you tack another week onto it, right? With injuries. So it is going to be crazy. But my preseason prediction, even, and this was post losing the number of guys that they did, I picked the Ravens to win the division at 12-5. If you win these next 3 weeks, I think you're in a really good position to be on that track. And I think 12-5 in my mind wins this division and might win it by two games, but quite possibly. But that doesn't mean that it's just going to be a walk in the park, and areas that have been weak for this team or problematic for this team, they got to figure some things out. But I like something that you said, not that I like it for the Ravens. I like the point that you made though, in terms of talking about these 30 somethings, that defensive line, I mean, Calais Campbell, they've leaned on him a lot. He has played a lot of snaps and he's played really well to his credit. Now people say, he only has a half sack. And he's the kind of guy that if you're watching the game, you see how disruptive he's been, but I think he's probably played more than you would like him to have to play. And remember the COVID, the close contacts game, they didn't have Matabike, they didn't have Brandon Williams, but he's the guy that has played really well, but he's 35. And if he's playing so much in September and October, what is that going to look like come December? We know Brandon Williams' injury history. you know, I don't think Brandon Williams has played his best football this year. You know, it's father time catching up with him. You know, Derek Wolfe has not been on the field. He started practicing during the bye week, so you expect him to be back soon, but he's got a back issue. Is that something that's going to be totally fine, or is he going to play 3 weeks and then he's on the shelf again? I mentioned Matabike not being, you know, not taking the step forward that you would have liked. He's been fine, but he hasn't been a difference maker. So that, and you talk about the offensive line with some of their veterans there they're leaning on, and clearly some injury replacements. It is one of those deals where if Lamar Jackson's healthy and upright, I'll take the Ravens' chances against anybody. It doesn't mean they're going to win every game, but you love their chances. That's how transcendent, that's how fantastic he is. But ultimately, he is going to need some help along the way, right? And you do worry about some of those positions that we've mentioned that are problematic. And because of their injuries, you know, there's some positions right now, they're kind of holding on by a thread. And if you have one more injury at the wrong spot, something that's problematic becomes more crisis-like. And that's what does concern me about the Ravens. Much as I like their moxie, I like their resiliency, I like their level of experience compared to some of these other teams we've mentioned, like the Bengals, who, you know, haven't won anything with this group whatsoever. So you like that, but there are definitely some problems that they had to acknowledge during the bye week that it'll be interesting to see how John Harbaugh and the coaching staff and Eric DaCosta in the front office, for that matter, go about trying to address that and seeing what it looks like, not just for the Vikings on Sunday, but moving forward, because they do some things really well, but there are other things that they've had their issues. And I think that was apparent in the midst of a 5-2 start that you should still feel good about overall.
Luke is out in Owings Mills. He'll be out there all week. You can find him, Luke, at WNST.net. And, of course, Baltimore Luke out on the social media thing. I am everywhere on social media. Y'all are Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, wherever things are happening this week. The Vikings are in. Probably no snowstorm pictures, but we're going to get out and have some crab cakes this week. I know the weather's changing. It's sweater weather, as they say, but it's November. Thursday, we'll be presenting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour at Silver Spring Mining Company in White Marsh, Perry Hall, Bel Air Road. Let yourself play and come on out on Thursday. Have a crab cake. Luke, I talk about the crab cakes and online. I had to apologize. I couldn't make it last week. I had back issue spasm thing that set off all sorts of terrible things that happened to me Friday. But I'm back on the field, feeling much better than I felt. And people were like, get the crab pretzel, get the ribs. And I'm like, I'm going to get the crab cake. I'm going to get all of that. And then Friday, I'm going to be down at Chop Tank with our friends at the Atlas Group and Alex Smith. And I've had the crab cake there, and I've had the fried chicken there, and I've had some of the sides there, including the crab soup. So we're going to be at Chop Tank in Fells Point on Friday, both of those from 2 until 5. Our mayor, Brandon Scott, will be joining us at Coco's Pub on the 17th. Next week, we're at Fadley's on Wednesday. We're going to have some great guests for that one with Don Moeller as well. And then next Friday, finally on the 12th, that's the 10th at Fadley's, the 12th, we're going to be up at Nick's Grandstand Grill. All of it presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. They actually gave me a mask to wear, so if I'm indoor, I'm going to probably be putting this one on here. All of our sponsors have been great through this bi-week period of time. You hear them, feel them, see them. We talk about them all the time. They do power us up here before and after the bye. We're getting ready for the holiday season, and got some new sponsors here as well. So all is well. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour, Ravens football, and Baltimore Positive.